Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner of the Washington Times filling in for the living legend Michael Savage. Michael is off today, taking a much-needed day off, but he will definitely be back and fully loaded and ready to go. My friends, it's good to be here again. As many of you know, I have filled in for Michael in the past. It is truly an honor and a privilege to fill in for him every time. The man is literally a living legend of talk radio. He is the world heavyweight champion of talk radio. He is somebody that I have admired now for many years for his independence, his courage, his intelligence, his wit, and his patriotism. And Michael, again, your shoes are so big, they're impossible to fill. But if you're listening out there, thank you so much again for this wonderful, wonderful opportunity. There is a lot that we'll be talking about. You can go to michaelsavage.com for some of the latest stories. We're going to talk about what's happened in North Korea with Bill Clinton's intervention. We'll be talking about healthcare and some of the latest developments there. But first, what I really want to talk about is something that I found, frankly, stunning. And that was the recent profile of Michael in the New Yorker magazine. It's in the current issue. It's done by Khalifa Sene, who's basically a music and jazz critic, a cultural critic. And I have to say, when I first heard about The New Yorker doing the piece on Michael, and when the piece was first published, I honestly expected this to be a liberal hit piece. For those of you that don't read The New Yorker, it is essentially a magazine for the New York leftist intelligentsia. It's clearly liberal, even socialist on some things. It is a cultural magazine. It looks at film criticism. It looks at art. It looks at novels. It's really for the sort of New York artsy-fartsy crowd in Greenwich Village, and many of them obviously politically very far to the left. Yet to my utter shock and amazement, this piece was extremely sympathetic to Michael. There is a lot of extremely good information there. I recommend all of you to go and read it. It's very, very well written. And I have to say, as somebody who is a columnist and earns basically my living through the pen, Khalifa Sene can write. And I think in many ways he captures the essence of Michael Savage. And what Khalifa Sene points out in the New Yorker article is that what Michael Savage has done over the past 15 years, and this point cannot be stressed enough, is that he has created an independent conservative movement in the United States. What you people in the Savage Nation represent is the bastion of independent conservatism. It is people like you that champion borders, language, and culture, which are the great triumvirate values of the Michael Savage Show and of the Savage Nation. And he has done this in the face of immense opposition, both from the left and from the right. And what this piece shows is that at his core, and I think this is the reason why Michael has been immensely successful on the air, is that he is more than a political commentator. Michael is more than just a pundit. He's more than just a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. If you want to get that sort of stuff, there are other people you can listen to. What you're going to get from Michael Savage is something different. You're going to get somebody who in many ways is a talk radio artist. He is almost a one-man play. He is somebody that is not only personally engaging, but will speaks truth to power. He is somebody who will call it like it is. And whether it's popular or not, he doesn't care. And I truly believe that this has been the secret to his success. Now, yes, look, there's no denying this fact. And this is my opinion, and I think many people would bear this out. On a pure talent basis, Michael Savage is by far the best talk radio talent there is. And I'm going to say something now that maybe Michael is not going to like, and maybe many of you in the Savage Nation aren't going to like. But I'm going to be very honest. To me, there are only two talk radio icons. There are truly only two talk radio revolutionaries. And I know I shouldn't mention the opposition, but in all fairness, if you look at the early 1990s, when Rush Limbaugh first broke on the scene, there's no getting around the fact. He transformed AM radio. AM radio was dying until Rush Limbaugh came along. And he made the idea of political talk radio sexy again. He made political talk radio a gigantic political force in this country by galvanizing opposition to the Clinton administration. And I think he's gotten long in the tooth. I think he's gotten flabby. I think he's been resting on his laurels. I think in many ways he is past his prime. I know he's doing well now in terms of ratings, but that's only because Obama's singling him out. So people are listening to say, hey, what is this man saying? But in terms of his talk radio talent, he is to me an overweight. He's gone through prescription drugs, has damaged. And I think he's gotten tired. I think he's somebody who has said what he has to say and doesn't have much left to say. What is unique about Michael, and this is why I believe he's the other great revolutionary, and I think his legacy will even be more enduring and lasting than Limbaugh, is that Michael showed that you do not have to be part of the Republican establishment or the conservative establishment to succeed in talk radio. In other words, Michael Savage embodies the dream of the son of immigrants, in which you come to America and on your own strength and hard work and determination, on your own talent, on your own desire and drive to succeed, you can pick yourself up by the bootstraps and literally rise yourself to the top. You can climb to the top. And that's what this man has done. And my friends, make no mistake about it. He has done it solely on his own voice and on his own talent. And he has done this as a man who is a maverick. He is not somebody who sucks up to the Republican power establishment. He is not somebody who sucks up to Fox News. He's not. And for this, he has been vilified, not just by the left, because you would expect it from the left, because they hate any conservative of consequence and of intelligence, but from many on the right. And he has managed to survive over 15 years and, frankly, not just survive, but prosper. He now, as the New Yorker piece laid out, has the third most popular show in the country with at least 8 million listeners. Frankly, I hear from other people it's closer to 10, maybe even 12 million listeners a week. In other words, Michael Savage is the Rocky Balboa of talk radio. He is somebody who keeps taking a beating and keeps going forward. He takes a punch and he keeps coming. And I believe that that has been the secret to his success. And what he has done is that he has carved out, in my view, freedom of speech in this country. He has carved out intellectual freedom in this country. And if you look at what he's been able to do over the last 15 years, there's no getting around it. It's a miracle. It really is a miracle. It would have been thought of as utterly unimaginable 10, 15 years ago. Because the only way other conservative talk radio hosts have succeeded is they tether themselves, they yoke themselves to the Republican Party and to the mainstream conservative establishment. And if you deviate from that, they exercise you. They just throw you out. You're like a heretic. And as the New Yorker piece, I think, brilliantly shows, Michael Savage, I'm quoting now from the piece, is an anomaly. He is a heretic among heretics, nearly as contemptuous of his fellow radio stars. He refers to Limbaugh as the golfer and calls Beck the hemorrhoid with eyes, as he is of President Obama. He calls himself a genuine independent conservative, which is kind of a sales pitch and apparently an effective one. And it is. And I think Michael really, in this sense, is the real deal. And what he has shown is that in an industry full of cowards and hypocrites, in an industry of people who are just literally gold diggers, who will say one thing on the air but practice something else in their personal lives, Michael Savage is the real deal. He is a man who speaks from the heart. He says what he means, and he means what he says. And at his core, what is it that he champions? He champions a distinct national sovereignty and cultural identity, that we as Americans have to protect our borders and our culture and our language, that we are now under assault from illegal immigration on all sides, that we are slowly losing our patrimony and our heritage as a country, that we have now been assaulted by a socialist elite that is slowly stripping us of our most basic and sacred freedoms. And here Michael Savage says, no, enough is enough. And so to me, what I find very interesting is this. Here you have a major profile piece in a major liberal magazine, in many ways a trendsetter. Remember, this is the magazine that published Seymour Hersh, the journalist who called Bush and Cheney a war criminal. And after it was published in The New Yorker, every liberal media outlet from The New York Times to CNN began repeating that mantra. But now you have this piece on Savage, a surprisingly sympathetic and in-depth piece. And yet the mainstream media is silent. And not only the liberal mainstream media, but the conservative media establishment is silent. I mean, think about it. Just stand back for a second. I don't care what shows you listen to. Just stand back for a second. If you have a major radio personality, a conservative radio personality, who is blacklisted and banned from Britain because they want, quote, balance to offset the Islamic fascists and the Islamic terrorists that were on the blacklist, that were banned. This is a major international story. We're talking about an assault on freedom of speech. We're talking about censorship. We are talking about an assault on the most sacred rights that we Americans hold dear. We are talking about political corruption at the highest levels of government. And yet, the conservative establishment and conservative talk show hosts have remained, for the most part, silent. Why is that? And I have an answer. I believe it is because Savage has the guts and the courage to say things that are no longer unthinkable, to say things that are no longer polite, to say things that people no longer believe can be said or should be said. He is stating now clearly and unequivocally. He is now ringing the alarm bell, saying we are slowly losing our country. We are slowly being swamped with third world immigration. We now have illegal immigrants literally getting free medical care, exploiting our welfare system. We have a federal government that is now out of control. We are now being buried under a mountain of debt. We have a government and a country that no longer is willing to stand up to the evil of Islamic fascism. We have a liberal elite and even a conservative elite that is no longer serious about winning the war on terror. In other words, Michael Savage is a nationalist conservative. Most of the other conservative talk show hosts are globalist conservatives. They champion open borders and free trade. Michael Savage champions the very opposite. He champions secure borders and an America first economy. He believes in putting America first because we are all Americans first and foremost. And so what our government should do is not be shilling for the Europeans or for the Chinese or for the Saudis. We shouldn't be in bed with them and leveraging our future and mortgaging our future to them. We should be putting American workers and American businesses and American borders and American citizens first and foremost. This is what's distinguished Michael Savage, and I believe this is why there has been a concerted media effort, both left and right, to be silent about him and to slowly try to ostracize him. But as the New Yorker piece shows, it isn't working. But I want to hear from you. Why is the mainstream media being silent on Michael Savage? And why are conservatives afraid to defend Michael Savage and to talk about the fact that he's been blacklisted and to talk about the fact that he is now one of the most potent, powerful media forces in this country. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The number to call is 1-800-449-8255. Why is the mainstream media, and in particular the conservative media establishment, afraid to talk about Michael Savage? I want to hear from you. An absolutely sizzling profile piece on Michael by Khalifa Saneh. It is absolutely excellent. And I just want to make one more quick comment before we go to the phone lines after the break. There is something else that I think Michael touches on that I think is another reason why he has become such a resonating force with so many Americans. And it's this. He truly understands that the last discriminated group in the United States are not African Americans. They're not Hispanics. They're not women. You can pick whatever victim group you want. It is now the white male. Over the last 25 to 30 years, because of policies like affirmative action, because of policies like welfare, because of a general climate of multiculturalism and feminism, white males have been systematically discriminated against. They've been discriminated against in the workplace. They're discriminated against in the home. They're discriminated against in television and movies and our popular culture. We now despise white males. So much so that we have now developed self-loathing for this country. We now despise our own very founding fathers and everything they accomplished. Why? Because apparently, according to the liberal left intelligentsia, according to the liberals in the media, these people are racist, sexist, and homophobic. Well, they weren't. And that's the point that Michael Savage makes again and again. It is white males that help build this country. And it's about time that people stop discriminating against them. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. I want to hear from all of you. 1-800-449-8255. Why is the mainstream media deliberately covering up Savage's popularity? And more importantly, why is the conservative media establishment afraid to talk and address Michael Savage? What are they afraid of? To be perfectly frank, my friends, I think one of the reasons is there's no getting around this fact. A lot of it is professional jealousy and envy. You know, as I've stated before, I mean, here I am in the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C. I've been here now for nearly 10 years at the Washington Times. And I have to tell you, this city is built on professional envy and jealousy and constant backbiting and backstabbing. And if you rise up too quickly, too fast, people want to knock you down. And I think there are a lot of conservatives who are, frankly, jealous and envious of Michael Savage. And in particular, as I said before, of the way he's done it. He has done it by not towing the Republican line. He's done it by not towing the conservative line. He is somebody who speaks his own mind. He is a genuine maverick. For example, I mean, I thought he was dead on about John McCain when he came out and said John McCain is an extremely weak candidate. And if conservatives aren't careful, you're going to have Barack Obama win the presidency and you're going to have socialism. Well, he was right. And again, he's been warning. Look at the fanfare over Sarah Palin. It's almost a cult of personality. And again, Michael Savage is the only one coming out saying, look, she may be a good governor of Alaska. Nothing personal against her. The way the media has been treating her and trashing her is despicable. But she is not presidential timber. And if conservatives put all their eggs in her basket, they're going to get slaughtered again in 2012 as they did in 2008. And so I think in many ways it's his independence and his success that I believe is fueling a lot of this silence and profound deep resentment, not just by the left, but by many on the right. But I want to hear from you. Let's go to Todd in New Hampshire, 1-800-449-8255. Todd in New Hampshire, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Good to talk to you. Yeah, I believe that the mainstream media is afraid that they're going to make him even more popular than he is now. He's in number three in the country. They don't want to see him as number two, and the other conservative talk show hosts don't even want any part of that. Number three he's just getting started. He could work his way to number one. They're fearful. Everybody's fearful that he's going to get more popular, more people, more listeners. Everybody going to be getting all the information that they need instead of the information that everybody else is throwing out there to them.
Todd, you nailed it. Bingo. You absolutely nailed it. This, to me, is the heart of the issue. What you are now seeing is that conservatives in particular are afraid that – I don't believe the numbers, by the way. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's number three. I suspect he's number two. I could be wrong, but anyway. Okay, fine. Let's just say for argument's sake, he's number three. If you give him more attention, if you give him a bigger platform, if you give him a bigger forum, they're worried that deep down – people are going to listen to him and they're going to like it. They're going to agree with him. Because you know what? What he speaks, when he talks about issues, people listen and people agree with him. Because deep down, let me ask all of you, don't you truly feel like you're losing your country? Yeah, I'm not, you know, forget about if you're in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles. That's obvious. I mean, you have now been so overrun with third world immigration, it's blatant, it's right in front of your eyes. But I'm talking about if you're living, in Iowa or Kansas or Mississippi or Texas or places in the heartland. Don't you feel that bit by bit, drop by drop, day by day, you are slowly losing your country? Not just in terms of illegal immigration, in terms of American culture, American values, the creeping socialism, the constant big government, the bailout of the banks, the bailout of the auto industry, the one bailout after another, the bailout of the financial sector. Now they're gonna swamp you with nationalized health care, cap and trade. And to see our president go around the world and grovel and apologize for the United States, don't you feel deep down, is this America? Is this what our founding fathers wanted? Is this the country that defeated the Japanese and the Germans in World War II? Is this the country that in 1776 brought the greatest empire in the world, the British Empire, to its knees? Is this country? Or are we not becoming like Rome? Decadent, self-indulgent. We've lost our patriotism. We've lost our civic duty. We no longer care. And we are slowly going the way of decline and eventual decay. And when Savage talks about these issues, when he says, wake up, America, it's still not too late, but wake up, many people listen. And I believe that is what the mainstream media is afraid of. And I believe even many in the conservative elites are afraid of that message, because that threatens their power and that threatens their very worldview. Will from Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation. Welcome, Will.
Hello, Jeff. Yeah, I got an opinion on why he's not even mentioned. It's almost surreal. I mean, I listen to these conservative guys, and you don't even hear the word Mike Savage. I mean, it's almost surreal. Well, I think I'm reading it between the lines, and what I'm coming up with is that there's a very powerful syndicate that told these guys that you mention the word Mike Savage and you're gone. And I think that that's the answer. I'm almost positive, and I'd like to hear any reason why it wouldn't be the answer. They've got power over the country to control the thought. They don't even mention the Mike Savage's name. He's a non-person. Welcome to Big Brother, 1984. Well, that's what it's all about, Jeff. Thank you.
No, Will, listen, look, you make some very good points, my friend. Look, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to be very frank with you. Look, I've been now in D.C. for a while. I cover Washington politics. I got very good sources. I'm not bragging, but I'm being very frank. I have very good sources in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party. In all of my years here in Washington, I am telling you, I have never been more afraid for my country than now. We are losing our freedom and our liberty. There is no getting around that fact. And now you essentially now have two blocks of power. You have the mainstream media, which is determined to ram socialism down our throat. They want to create what they have in the European Union. They want to create a socialist empire where you have nationalized healthcare. You have literally the government controlling every aspect of the economy, abortion on demand, gay marriage, and this kind of foreign policy internationalism, where everything is done through the United Nations. Everything is done through diplomacy. In other words, appeasement. They want to sell out to radical Islam. And then you have the conservative elites. Yeah, take the Wall Street Journal. Yes, they don't like socialism, but what they love is free trade and unlimited immigration. In other words, they champion corporate America. And that, my friends, has been the Republican Party for the last 10 years. They have betrayed fundamental conservative values. You saw it clearly under George W. Bush. It was Bush that pushed for amnesty for illegal immigrants. It was Bush that pushed for the prescription drug benefit program. It was Bush that began this whole thing with the stimulus packages and bailing out the cars. Obama is now completing what Bush started. In other words, you have been betrayed. You have been betrayed by your elites. You have been betrayed by your political representatives. And very few people are willing to risk their lives and risk their reputations and put their necks on the line and say this very fact. And Savage has been doing it for 15 years. And that's why I believe there is a big target on his back. But still, I come back to this point. Why is it that the liberal New Yorker, the liberal leftist New Yorker, has the guts and the intelligence to write a sympathetic piece on Savage? I mean, this is not, I mean, look, it's last week's issue. You probably have to read it online, but go and read it. This is not a 700-800 word op-ed piece. This is a lengthy magazine profile, and it covers this man from his personal life to his views to many of his cultural tastes. And it is very, very insightful and sympathetic. So again, why is the conservative media blackballing him for the most part? But why are some liberal outlets like The New Yorker putting him in a sympathetic light? I find that very interesting. We've got time for a couple more calls. Let's go to Kirk in Indiana. Kirk, you're listening to The Savage Nation. Welcome, Kirk.
Thank you, Cooner. I'm a former Marine, and I have put myself on the line for this country. And my youngest brother as well served for tours of duty in Iraq. And I just feel like, as conservative, we have to take back the Republican Party, because that's the only platform that we have. Don't you agree?
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, Kirk, there's no question about it. I think that conservatives, we have to do several things. We have to first take back our movement. Our movement has been hijacked by pseudo-phony conservatives. And this happened in the 1990s. When Gingrich and his gang rode into power, they claimed that they were going to clean up the cesspool in Washington. They were going to scale back the size of government, slash your taxes, and slowly but surely empower you, the American people. But what happened under Gingrich? The Republican Revolution got derailed. It got sabotaged by corrupt Republicans who began to come in there and see the party as their ticket, as their stepping stone to making themselves wealthy and rich and powerful. And so the movement got derailed, the party got derailed, and the country got derailed. And until we take back our movement, and until we take back our party, we'll never be able to take back our country. Hello, Kirk.
Hi, I'm still here. I listen to a lot of conservative radio. I'm a small business owner, and I'm able to download and listen while I work, and I listen to a lot of you guys, and I feel like everybody's saying the same thing. I disagree a little bit with what you were talking about in your opening statements. I hear the same thing with, you know, closing the borders and being us in our language, and I agree with all that. And I believe in our Constitution, and I believe that we're so far from it right now. It's like our military is the only ones that are going to get it back.
Well, Kirk, let me ask you this, though. If so many conservative hosts talk about borders, language, and culture, why is it that Savage is blackballed? Why are other conservative talk show hosts afraid to even mention his name?
I
mean, honestly, you would think he's Dracula or something. I mean, he's Satan. They're afraid to even mention his name. I mean, why do you think that is?
Because they're friends. I mean, you got three of the top five, I guess, are all buddies. So
three of the top five are buddies, but that's my point, is that one hand washes the other. And if you're looking at conservative talk show hosts, look, Kirk, there's no getting around this fact. Look, I don't want to stand here and badmouth other conservative talk show hosts, but I'm going to be very honest with you. Many of them are simply mouthpieces and shills for the Republican Party. They refuse to stand up to George W. Bush when he was slowly bankrupting this country. They refuse to stand up for vital conservative principles. Now, yes, when the base finally revolted, when the conservative base said enough is enough, we are not going to give amnesty to 20, maybe even 40 million illegal immigrants. This is going to destroy us. They had no choice but to discuss the issue. But where the hell were they in the 1990s when this problem began to metastasize, when it began to spread like a cancer? Where were they on the vote on NAFTA? I can't tell you how many. I remember, look, I don't want to mention his name again, but I'll be honest with you. I remember Rush Limbaugh. In 1994, when all conservatives were calling him up saying, this thing with NAFTA, this North American Free Trade Agreement is going to kill the United States. It is going to destroy our sovereignty. It is going to open up the borders to a flood of illegal Mexican immigrants. You know what his answer was? Don't worry. Your local 7-Eleven isn't going anywhere. You're not going to lose your job. That wasn't the issue. The issue was control over our borders. Yes, we as conservatives are for trade and even free trade. But we are not for managed trade. We are not for trade that destroys our sovereignty. We are not for trade that dissolves our borders. Well, for the last nearly 15 years, we have been now under an onslaught. We are losing our cities. We're losing our way of life. We're losing our very government. And finally, a man has stood up and said enough is enough. And he's got 8, 10, 12 million listeners a week. And when he's profiled in The New Yorker, everybody's silent. Nobody wants to say a word. To me, I find that very revealing about the mainstream media and about the conservative press. And it's about time somebody spoke truth to power. I'm Jeff Kooner, sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage. I want to hear from you, 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-8255. Why is the conservative media establishment blackballing Michael Savage? This is Jeff Kooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Why is the conservative media blackballing Michael Savage? I want to hear from you. Let's go to Pablo in Houston. Pablo, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I thank you for your time. I'll just start by saying this. They will not allow this to happen again. I'll go ahead and take you real quick. Back in the 90s, the icons from then were Arsenio Hall, Sally Jesse Raphael, Oprah Winfrey. There was other people that just kept saying Rush Limbaugh. And I was not listening to talk radio, so I was curious, well, who is this guy? Who is this Rush Limbaugh? They will not make the mistake again. They are containing him. This is coming from the Conservative Party and the liberal media. Nobody will make that mistake again. You have to understand, for somebody that was not listening to talk radio, I now became a talk radio head because they kept talking about Rush Limbaugh. And I agree with you. He's weakened very, very much as opposed to Michael Savage. I mean, it's not even a comparison.
No, Pablo, listen, I completely agree with you. And let me just say this. Again, look, I don't want to offend Michael, but I have to be very honest. I speak from the heart. That's the only way I can do it. I've heard him now. Look, I'm a journalist, so I don't get to hear every one of his shows just because, frankly, I'm in the newsroom, usually working on deadline. But I try to catch his show as often as I can. On several occasions, I have heard him say he's 67. Maybe it's time for him to retire. I think he's making – it's up to him. Look, if he wants to retire, it's up to him. You know, he's made enough money and he can take care of his family and God bless him. But honestly, I believe he is making a huge mistake. I believe that he is now in many ways still in the prime of his career. To me, a man between 55 and 75 is when he is truly at his intellectual height. This is when a man has attained that much wisdom, experience, and intelligence, where I believe he is at his most effective. And I believe that Savage has at least another 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe even 10 excellent years ahead of him. And right now is the time for him to lead an independent conservative movement. He keeps rising. The others keep declining. And if you look at Rush Limbaugh, I believe, yes, Obama has singled him out. Why? Because I believe he can make him into a conservative caricature. I believe that in the end, the liberals think they can make him into their poster child so they can beat up on the conservative movement. But if they try that with a guy like Savage, he will tear them to pieces. And they know it. Because Limbaugh, frankly, doesn't have Savage's mind, Savage's intellect, Savage's training, and most importantly, Savage's character. He doesn't have his bedrock principles, and he doesn't have his bedrock courage. And that's what makes Savage very dangerous, and that's why I believe they're trying to blacklist him. Let's quickly go to Steve in New York City. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff? Hey, listen,
good, good.
I think basically Limbaugh and Hannity are closet big tenters, and that's part of the problem right there. And Savage isn't. You know, they're not willing to ditch the Republican Party. Savage would. You know, and that's what's going to take to win. When the conservatives leave the Republican Party in force and the Republicans split the vote with the liberal vote with the Democrats, the conservatives in this country will have a majority and will take control. That's the only way we're going to win. You can't do this big tent stuff where you take Northeast liberals, the ones I have to contend with up here, and just coddle them in the party, bring them on the air, promote them. That's what they're doing, and it's insane.
Steve, you're exactly right. You are exactly right. What they have been trying to do now, and it has failed, is to bring in liberal Republicans. That when you talk about Northeast Republicans, they are liberal big government Republicans. In other words, they're non-Republicans, and we should get rid of them. And the only guy that has the guts to say it is Michael Savage, and that's why he's being blacklisted. I'm Jeff Kooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'd like to thank President Obama, Secretary Clinton, Vice President Gore, who we also call Al, to our loved ones, friends, colleagues, and to the complete strangers with the kindness of hearts who showed us so much love and sent us so many positive thoughts and energy. We thank you. We could feel your love all the way in North Korea. It is what kept us going in the darkest of hours. It is what sustained our faith that we would come home.
That was Laura Ling, one of the released American journalists. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times, filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today, but he will definitely be back, batteries recharged and ready to go. What can I say? I mean, that was a very emotional, moving testament from Laura Ling. She, along with Yuna Lee, were finally released. They came home today to a very emotional greeting. President Obama, obviously, getting a lot of credit, but in particular, Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, who went down to North Korea, to Pyongyang, personally met with Kim Jong-il, negotiated their release, and of course, Al Gore, who in many ways is the boss of these journalists because they work for one of his media companies. And so it was basically a return to the 1990s. Here you have Al Gore and Bill Clinton back again in the limelight. You know, I have to be very frank. I am very happy that both Ling and Lee are home. They are Americans. They were kidnapped when they were in China near the North Korean border doing a piece on refugees. They were sentenced to 12 years hard labor by a kangaroo North Korean court. Clearly, they were held as political hostages by that brutal dictator, Kim Jong-il, mini-me, this sort of megalomaniac dear leader who keeps shrinking every time I see him. But anyway, they were held in a dungeon. People feared for their very safety and their very lives. And this has been an issue now that's been going on for the last couple of months. And I am very happy that they are home, that they are safe and sound, and that they are with their families. But I have to say, I believe that in the annals of history, when people look back at this time, they will see this as a watershed moment. Because what we did here was we profoundly betrayed American national interests. We had our former president go down to Pyongyang. Now, think about this. This is the man who was president of the United States throughout the 1990s. He goes with the full prestige of the presidency. And he goes on a private humanitarian mission, or he claims. Yet his wife is the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. So I don't buy it, and frankly, the North Koreans don't buy it, that this is a private humanitarian mission. And he goes to Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea. And right there at the airport, who is he greeted by? But by North Korea's top nuclear negotiator. In other words, the North Koreans are basically telling us to our face they are going to link the nuclear weapons issue with these two American journalists. And then Bill Clinton meets Kim Jong-il in private. What was said, we do not know. But the rumor in Washington has been for the last several months, and I can tell you this definitively, that the Obama administration has been working on a deal with Pyongyang, with the Kim Jong-il Stalinist regime, that in order to free those two American journalists, the United States is going to agree to bilateral one-on-one talks with North Korea. In other words, we are going to abandon the six-party talks. And this is what Kim Jong-il has wanted from the beginning. He has essentially blackmailed the United States. He has blackmailed our commander-in-chief. And once again, our comrade-in-chief Barack Hussein Obama has sold the United States right down the river. Because if there are nuclear negotiations between the United States and Pyongyang, I guarantee you one thing. North Korea will demand that it keep its nuclear arsenal. North Korea's entire regime is based upon nuclear weapons. You take away nuclear weapons, that regime collapses tomorrow. It has no legitimacy with its people. It is utterly powerless. It is toothless. It has literally nothing to offer on the world stage. Yet with nuclear weapons, it can sell it to terrorists around the world. This is one of our most feared and dangerous enemies and adversaries. Kim Jong-il has repeatedly said on North Korean radio and in North Korean newspapers and state-controlled media that his goal is to destroy the United States, that he believes China is now the rising superpower in the world, that communism is destined to make a comeback. And we know for a fact that North Korea has been selling nuclear technology and missiles to the Islamic fascists in Iran, to Hezbollah, to Hamas, that they were in fact behind the Syrian nuclear reactor that was destroyed by the Israelis several years ago. In other words, they are part of the axis of evil. that is determined to destroy and humiliate the United States on the world stage. And yet, what do? We send our president, our former president, on a high-profile trip where there he is groveling in front of Kim Jong-il, that maniacal midget who literally has murdered over a million of his own citizens, where he has slave labor camps throughout the entire country. He has so destroyed and impoverished his country. I kid you not. The average size of the North Korean citizen has shrunk by 6 inches over the last generation. 6 inches. That's how malnourished they are. And yet Bill Clinton goes to Pyongyang and has a big photo op with Kim Jong-il and all the big top North Korean nuclear negotiators. And what is Kim Jong-il going to do with that photo? He is going to play it on television and in the newspapers around the clock, because he is going to tell his people, look at the Americans. Look how weak they are. Look how they respect us. They come to us and they ask the dear leader for his permission, for his kingly, godly benevolence to free these two American journalists. And here we are, the United States of America, the world's last great superpower, reduced to a paper tiger. We are now literally kissing the feet and the hands. We are kneeling in front of Kim Jong-il. Now, what is going to happen the next time? I can tell you right now what's going to happen the next time. He's going to take more American hostages, and he's going to demand more concessions. And in particular, he's going to have the Obama administration sit down face to face and discuss the nuclear issue. And again, we have abandoned our allies. Because if you look at South Korea and Japan, they have hostages in North Korea. This is something the mainstream media doesn't want you to know about. You think we were the only ones with hostages? The Japanese and South Koreans have had their citizens abducted for the last 20 to 25 years. They are rotting in the prisons of North Korea. And we, the United States, have told them repeatedly, do not link the nuclear issue with your citizens being jailed. We can't do that. And yet now, we slap our allies right in the face. And the question I have, I'll be very honest with you. If I'm one of our allies, if I'm in Seoul, South Korea, if I'm the president of South Korea, or I'm in Tokyo, and I'm in the Japanese cabinet, I'd say, why the hell didn't Bill Clinton talk about our citizens who are in prison? Why didn't he try to negotiate their release? Why only the two Americans? I mean, here we are. We're on the front lines. We're facing the Chinese giant. We have to deal with the threat of a North Korean nuclear attack on our border. Every time the Americans ask us to do something, we do it. We are their closest allies. South Korea in particular fought with us in the Korean War. They shed blood with American blood on Korean soil. They have to live with this fanatical madman right across their border. And yet here they are, literally, again, abandoned. And so what is going on here with the Obama administration? It is the same pattern. We are betraying our allies. We are slapping them in the face. Look at Israel. We are putting pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israelis to make concession after concession after concession to Islamic terrorists and to those Palestinian jihadists. We are turning our back on Taiwan. We are turning our back on South Korea. We are turning our back on Japan. We turn our back on every one of our allies, Georgia, Ukraine. Yet Obama goes around the world and he apologizes to Putin and he praises that dictator. And when he's not done there, he goes to the Muslim world and he tells them how great Islam is. And he apologizes for the United States. And then he goes to China. He sends his top people to China. And we have Timothy Geithner begging the Chinese to buy our debt. And now he sends Bill Clinton to North Korea to coddle that dictator. Everywhere around the world, our allies are humiliated, our enemies are emboldened. We are making alliances with people who hate us, with people who seek our very destruction. And yet the mainstream media is fawning, absolutely fawning over all this. And if that wasn't enough, Mr. Global Climate Change, Mr. Messiah from literally a Mr. Noah's Ark, where we're all going to drown, apparently, with the ice caps melt under global warming. Here's what he had to say.
President
Boys,
Obama,
let's roll
and
clip five.
Countless members of his administration have been deeply involved in this humanitarian effort. To Secretary Clinton and the members of the State Department, several of whom are here, they have really put their hearts in this. It speaks well of our country that when two American citizens are in harm's way, that so many people would just put things aside and just go to work to make sure that this has had a happy ending. And we are so grateful to all of them.
There's Al Gore. It's like a blast from the past. Yeah, sure, we're all happy that two citizens have come home. Sure, many people have worked hard. But what did you give up? What did Bill Clinton promise Kim Jong-il during those private meetings? I'll bet you dollars to donuts what he promised him. What he told him was, hey, listen, Kim, forget about the six-party talks. Forget our allies. You want to keep your weapons? I think we can make a deal. Listen, we got to save face. We got these two journalists. And our liberal pals back home, they want them home as quickly as possible. So you give us the two American journalists, and I'll tell you what, we'll sit face to face with you and we'll make a deal. And if that consolidates your regime, if that perpetuates your brutal dictatorship, I don't care. Because the fact that millions of people are rotting in your prisons, the fact that you're murdering millions of your own citizens, I don't care. What I care about is power. And that, my friends, is Obama and Clinton in a nutshell. I'm Jeff Kooner from The Washington Times, filling in for the living legend, Michael Savage. I want to hear from you, 1-800-449-8255. Was it a good idea for Bill Clinton to go to North Korea? I want to hear from you. You're listening to Michael Savage on The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kooner from The Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Did Bill Clinton do the right thing by going to Pyongyang and negotiate the release of those two American journalists? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Charles in Wisconsin. Charles, welcome to The Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. I am a very conservative person. I think 99% of the Obama all the moves that he's made thus far are just awful, completely awful. But I don't see anything wrong with Bill Clinton going to North Korea and coming out with two Americans that were trapped there. I mean, I don't. If anything, it says that he still has the swagger, almost like Reagan had. You know, the best weapon is. You know, his words, what he says. So, I mean, my favorite Democrat is one that's out of office, and I see nothing wrong with Bill Clinton going over there and saving two Americans. I do think he should have saved some of our allies, or at least said something about it. Maybe he did, but I see nothing wrong with him going over there and saving two of our own. I think there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, look, Charles, look, there's no question about it. My heart melts when when you hear those two women talk and when you see them coming on the runway and, you know, greeting their families. There's no question about it. Every American wants them home. Nobody wants them rotting in a slave labor camp. But here's the point. By going there, Bill Clinton in many ways solidified Kim Jong-il's regime. He has now made the problem worse because he's rewarding bad behavior. He gave Kim Jong-il the one thing he wants, and that's legitimacy. He gave him a photo op, the mother of all photo ops. And this Kim Jong-il is going to use to solidify himself in power and to groom his youngest son to be the successor. But more than that, Charles, because it's been going on around here in Washington for the last couple of months, there clearly was a deal in the works. Make no mistake about it. You do not send a former president on a high-level, high-profile trip to Pyongyang to meet a dictator, unless the deal has already been arranged. Don't buy this liberal spin that somehow Bill Clinton sweet-talked Kim Jong-il into giving into releasing those two journalists. He didn't. This was done through the back door and through back channels. What did the Obama administration promise Kim Jong-il? That is the question. This is Jeff Kuhner filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We're back on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times filling in for the living legend, the world heavyweight talk radio champion, Michael Savage. I want to hear from all of you. Did Bill Clinton do the right thing in going to Pyongyang and helping to negotiate the release of the two American journalists? 1-800-449-8255. Before I get to the calls, I just want to make a couple of very quick points. One, and I think most importantly, there's no getting around this fact. This is why I believe that the Clinton mission to North Korea will be a disaster when everything is said and done, is that by going there, Bill Clinton has inadvertently propped up Kim Jong-il's regime. Remember, this is a man who was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. This is a man who had suffered a stroke last year. He was on the decline. He was clearly, his ascendancy was no longer very clear. He was now in decline. His powers were ebbing. Many people around him were slowly gathering more and more power. And there, in fact, was even talk about internal regime change. Now, yes, it would still be a communist regime, but there would be, there was considerable talk that it would be much less totalitarian, much less brutal, much less sadistic, frankly, more sane. Now what this trip has done is it has propped him up and it has now given him the kind of power, cachet, and legitimacy that he has been looking for. This now strengthens Kim Jong-il. He can now turn to his generals and his fellow communists in the Politburo and say, look what I have done. I have brought the Americans to us. They sent their former president, Bill Clinton, to negotiate with me one-on-one, to ask me for my permission to allow these two journalists to be released. And more than that, I have wrung concessions out of the Americans. Barack Obama is no George Bush. Barack Obama is no longer following a policy of containment. He now wants to appease me. And this strengthens Kim Jong-il immeasurably. What Bill Clinton essentially did was he consigned millions of North Koreans to further slavery, further starvation, and further brutality and imprisonment. And this is why I believe that in the annals of history, this will be seen as a great betrayal. Secondly, and there's no getting around this point, clearly what you saw here, and I think Michael has made this point very eloquently, was a diplomatic offensive by both Hillary and Bill Clinton to undermine Obama. And you have been seeing that now increasingly. I can tell you this. The people in the Clinton camp have been talking to journalists in this city, myself included, and they are now bad-mouthing Obama at every turn. They believe he is weak on Russia. They do not like his Middle East policy. They certainly disagree with his decision to basically publicly state that he will not allow Israel to bomb Iran. And now I believe that they are now freeing these two journalists to upstage Barack Obama and to show that they are still a relevant, powerful force within the Democratic Party. What Hillary Clinton is angling for is this. She wants Barack Obama to lose in 2012 so he can't groom his own successor, and then to run in 2016 and the Clintons can come back. Because I can tell you this, because I've spoken to very high-level people very close to Hillary Clinton. Take this to the bank. The Clintons are seething over the defeat in 2008 in the Democratic primary. They have never forgiven Barack Obama for snatching the Democratic crown, and they believe the presidency from their hands. And they are plotting to undermine him at every turn. And it is very clear to me that this move by Bill Clinton is a sign, it is a clear sign to the world and to the American people that the Clintons still matter, the Clintons still have clout, and they are a force to be reckoned with in the Democratic Party. Let's get to the phone lines. Let's go to Phil in Sacramento. Phil, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. You just stole my thunder. I was going to point out the fact that I think this was a concerted effort on Hillary and Bill's part to snatch the presidency from Obama down the road. I think that they want to see him fail as well. And I disagree with your other caller previously. I think that this is a total fiasco and does strengthen Kim Jong-il. This guy's a nut. He's a pervert. He's a whiskey-holic. He loves to import women for his own pleasure. And he's a sick, twisted mind. And they've done nothing but legitimize this guy by going over there. Not only that, they've legitimized him in the eyes of China, who I think is basically pulling his strings.
Exactly. No, you nailed it. I mean, Phil, look, this is an open secret here in Washington. If China wanted his regime to fall, they could literally turn off the gas and the energy supplies. Energy, oil, and food is what China gives North Korea. They turn off the tap, that regime collapses literally within 24 hours. So China is backing North Korea, and they love the fact that North Korea is a thorn on our side, and that North Korea has been arming, aiding, and abetting Iran, Russia, Venezuela, Hamas, and Hezbollah. Every one of our enemies, North Korea has been helping. By going there, Bill Clinton has propped up this criminal, sadistic regime. And I have to say, you know, I got to tell you, one of the things about working in Washington, I get to meet a lot of foreign leaders. And I get in particular to meet a lot of people, a lot of leaders from Africa. And I got to say, they're tin pot dictators and they're absolute moral degenerates. But nobody, nobody can take tops the cake like Kim Jong-il. I mean, this guy, he imports Johnny Black whiskey. You say he imports women? No, no. He imports Swedish women. He has a fetish for Swedish women. Pyongyang is closed off to the entire world, but twice a week, I kid you not, there is Stockholm, Pyongyang, there is a direct flight, and it is filled with Swedish prostitutes and escort girls. That's all this guy wants to sleep with. And he is impoverishing his own people as he literally feasts every night on Russian caviar and champagne and having orgies with Swedish women. That's the kind of guy Kim Jong-il. And I got to be honest with you. I'm being very frank. Maybe that's why he and Bill got along so well. They could sit around and, hey, you like Swedish girls? I like Swedish girls. We got something in common. Although I think you like them tall and skinny, Kim. I like mine, frankly, a little more on the chunky side. You remember Monica Lewinsky, right? So, you know, they must have had a lot of good things to banter about. But in all seriousness, this guy, this trip was a major sellout of American national interests, and I believe it's going to hurt the United States for years to come. Let's go to Ashok in San Francisco. Ashok, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Okay, so thanks for taking my call. I do think Bill Clinton did the right thing because there was no bloodshed, no nothing on the surface of us, and we got two people back to the U.S. I see this no different than any negotiations made by past presidents, both Republican and Democrats. For example, the Iran-Contra affair, the U.S. helping Nicaraguans out. I don't see any difference in this. Absolutely.
No, I mean, Ashok, listen, you're throwing a lot of things in there. Look, the Iran-Contra affair, here we were arming, funding, and supporting anti-communist freedom fighters against a brutal totalitarian Marxist regime. What we have done here is the very opposite. By Bill Clinton going there, by doing such a high-profile trip, he has now literally resuscitated and resurrected Kim Jong-il. And when you say no blood was shed, you're completely wrong. Blood has been shed. It's the blood that is rotting in North Korean prisons and gulags and slave labor camps all across that country. And by keeping him in power and by helping to perpetuate him in power, we have sold those people down the river. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. I am extremely happy these two journalists are home. They are Americans. But let me tell you how badly we've fallen. Just imagine 100 years ago. Can you imagine if any other country dared to kidnap our citizens? Do you know what Theodore Roosevelt would have done? He would have sent the American army. He would have sent the American navy. He would have said, I'm giving you 48 hours. You release them and you better make sure there's not a hair on their head that's touched, or else I'm going to decimate you. And instead, we go there pleading, groveling, begging. And here's my question to everybody that's supporting this big initiative. Why did the president have to go there? Why did he have to go and meet him in private? Why did he have to give him such a major photo op? Why did he have to meet North Korea's top nuclear negotiator? Why is it that the North Koreans are bragging on state radio and state newspapers and state television that they have wrung significant concessions from the United States? What have we sold out? What have we betrayed to save these two journalists? That's the question I want to know. That's the question nobody wants to answer. But that is the mother of all questions. Let's quickly go to Grant in Portland. Grant, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff. I agree with everything you've been saying. I only have one comment about South Korea. And there are at least, least favorite ally in the Pacific Rim.
Why?
They backstabbed us for years. They've been protesting against us. And the only good thing about this is I can't wait to see how they react to this. And I hope they enjoy having Kim Jong-il empowered.
No, hold on. I mean, Grant, you seem very hostile to the South Koreans. I mean, how have they backstabbed us in the back? What have the South Koreans done to us except been exceptional allies?
Not in recent years, there have been many protests that they wanted us out of South Korea. And I'm just saying, maybe this will turn them around and make them become better allies.
Well, look, Grant, look, there's no question about it. There is a left-wing movement in South Korea, a pacifist peacenik movement. And like many liberals, they have their liberals. We have our liberals. They suffer from a mental disorder. Our liberals suffer from a mental disorder. They believe that the American presence out of South Korea is in fact going to help bring about peace. All it will do is it will embolden North Korea to attack South Korea once again. But they have now elected a conservative, pro-American government. The majority of South Koreans are clearly pro-American, clearly want the American troops to be there. But I have to say, Grant, it goes to a deeper level. One of the great accomplishments of the United States, and we as Americans, we neglect this, and I believe it's to our detriment, is that we have helped to democratize and bring about free markets and prosperity to much of Asia. We have turned traditional enemies like Japan into stalwart allies. And the South Koreans stood by us during the Korean War. They have stood by us throughout the entire Cold War. They have built one of the most prosperous, successful, and democratic countries, not only in Asia, but across the entire world. They have created a model for people in Asia to emulate. And I believe deep down, you want to see the difference between the left and the right? You want to see the difference between socialism and capitalism? Just look at North and South Korea. Literally at night, all of North Korea is dead. It is dark. They can't even provide their citizens with the basic electricity to be able to heat their homes and light their streets. South Korea is a hubbing Western-style democracy. Seoul, the electricity is on all night. The discotheques are on all night. The traffic jams are all night. People are making money hand over fist in South Korea. It is the exact opposite of North Korea. South Korea now has an obesity problem. North Korea has a starvation problem. This is the difference between the two systems. And now our South Korean and Japanese allies are going to ask themselves, our citizens have been abducted. Our citizens have been kidnapped. They're rotting in North Korean prisons and jails. Yet the State Department always tells us, hey, whoa, be patient. Yet now the Americans send Bill Clinton and they free their two journalists probably in exchange for some kind of nuclear concessions. What the hell is this? And so my question to Bill Clinton is a very simple one. What is American blood? Is Japan and South Korea, who are our bulwarks against North Korea and China? Remember, if there's a war there, they're the ones that are going to die. They're the ones that are going to suffer. Why aren't you defending their interests? No, Obama is more interested in North Korean dictators and in Chinese murderers and in Russian gangsters and Islamic fascists. He cares about their opinions, but he doesn't care about the opinions of our allies. And that, my friends, is why Barack Obama is slowly leading this country to ruin and defeat and destruction abroad. He is the worst president, not since Jimmy Carter. He is the worst president in the history of our republic. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Do you think that Bill Clinton's trip to Pyongyang was a success? I want to hear from you. I have to tell you, according to Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, she certainly thinks it was a success. They are glowing, both her and Bill. This has clearly been very, very, very successful for them. They are now obviously showcasing their power, their ability, their relevance on the world stage. And here's what she had to say after the two American journalists were released. Roll it, boys.
I was very pleased to get the news that my husband's plane had taken off from Pyongyang with the two young women on board. They are on their way to California, where they will be reunited with their families. I had a very brief conversation with my husband. We did not go into the details of some of the questions that you're asking. There'll be time to talk about that later. This was mostly just to communicate directly how relieved and pleased he was and we are with the successful completion of this mission.
Well, I mean, it was certainly politically successful for the Clintons. There's no question about that. I can see why they're glowing. This enhances Bill's prestige, and more importantly, it enhances Hillary's prestige. And clearly now they've upstaged Barack Obama, and they continue to wage their guerrilla war against Barack Obama. And, you know, my friends, I really want to stress this point to all of you. A lot of conservatives are under the illusion that Hillary is going to run a primary challenge against Barack Obama in 2012. I'm telling you, forget about it. It's a pipe dream. The Clintons would never do that. They would never do what Ted Kennedy tried to do against Jimmy Carter in 1980, and here's why. If Hillary ran against Obama in 2012 for the Democratic presidential nomination, the African-American community would never forgive the Clintons. And without the African-American community, the Clintons could never get elected to the White House. In fact, no Democrat could get elected to the White House without the African-American vote. But what they're trying to do is they are trying to undermine this president at every turn. They are waging an internal sabotage campaign so that he loses in 2012 to a Republican challenger, and then she will emerge as the Democratic heir apparent and the Democratic champion in 2016. And this is part of that concerted political effort. They have politically won. Barack Obama has politically lost. But more than that, the country has lost because of this betrayal. Let's quickly go to Holly in Las Vegas. So anyway, my friends, really what is happening here is a concerted political effort by the Clintons to now seize the initiative from Barack Hussein Obama. And my friends, I have to tell you, it is not just the Clintons. If you look at every issue in front of the Obama administration, whether it be the stimulus package, whether it be the budget, whether it be health care or cap and trade, our comrade in chief, our commander in chief is asleep at the wheel. the Democrats in Congress are running this administration. And now the Clintons are running this foreign policy. This is not a president. He's a joke. This is Jeff Kuhner filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times filling in for the living legend, the world heavyweight talk radio champion, Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael, I want to thank you once again, my friend, for the honor and the remarkable privilege that I have to fill into your giant shoes. For all of you out there, I've guest hosted for Michael before. It is always just such a wonderful experience. And Michael, I just can't thank you enough, my friend, and God bless you for your generosity. We've had a very, very good show up to now. We've talked about a lot of issues, but the one I really want to focus on is healthcare. There is now a growing revolt in this country against Obama's plan for nationalized healthcare to drag this country into a de facto socialist state. There are, in fact, some excellent articles on michaelsavage.com. I recommend you go to them. Some of them are extremely good, and also, frankly, on North Korea. Go to michaelsavage.com. My friends, I believe that now, within the next 6 months, the defining moment of the United States will be established. The next 6 to maybe 8 months will determine the destiny and fate of the United States as we've known it. Because what is at stake here with nationalized health care, with the plan that the Democrats are now trying to ram through Congress, is not just the government takeover of 1/7 of our economy. It is more than that. It is now the last nail in the socialist coffin of the United States. It is now the last stage of the complete transformation and makeover of the United States into a European-style nanny state. If this plan passes, the United States will cease to be a free country. It will cease to be a capitalist country. It will become a cradle-to-grave welfare entitlement state. We will be no different from the Europeans. We will be no different from many of the socialist economies in Asia. We will have surrendered all of our values, all of our principles, all of the sacrifices that our forefathers made to make this a free, self-governing republic. We will become a European socialist superstate. And this is what Barack Obama and the Democrats have been hungering for the last several decades. In fact, Obama openly writes about this in his autobiographies. He is a leftist through and through. He is a fascist. He is a national socialist, and he now wants to complete the final project of FDR and of Lyndon Johnson, the complete welfare state. You will now become a ward of government. You will now become a de facto slave and serf. The government will control everything: your pensions, your unemployment, your welfare, even your banks. They will even control much of the industry in this country, and they will control the most important thing of all, your very health. They will determine what doctors you go to. They will determine the price, and they will ration your care. They will make you at the mercy of the state. And that will empower the Democrats. And make no mistake about it, my friends. This has nothing to do with compassion. This has nothing to do with social justice or with taking care of the uninsured. Because all you have to do is look at Canada or look at Europe to see what has happened. Every country that has instituted socialized medicine has destroyed the conservative movement. Socialized medicine destroys conservatism. And here is why. It makes the middle class dependent upon the state. This is what the Democrats are now openly scheming. They want you to be so dependent, so yoked, so tethered to big government that you can never again vote for a truly conservative party. Because if you look at Canada, where I'm originally from, you see the effects of socialized medicine in every aspect of life. People now no longer imagine a time when they were in fact free to make their own healthcare choices. Canada only enacted socialized medicine about 30 years ago, 35 years ago. Before that, it was a private system. Well, now when I go up to visit my friends and my family members, I say, well, you know, what do you think about the healthcare system? To a man and a woman, everybody says it's horrible. They go, Jeff, it gets worse every year. The waiting lines get longer. The procedures take longer to get. X-rays now take 2, 3, 4 months. If you have cancer, it is basically a death sentence. So I said, well, why don't you guys push for private insurance? Well, if my child is sick and I don't have the money to pay for it, what do I do? And I'm looking at them and I'm like, well, what if your child is hungry and you don't have the money for it? What if your child needs to go to school and you don't have the money for it? But this is what socialized medicine does. It reduces you to the level of a child, of a dependent. You are no longer personally responsible. You are no longer self-reliant. You look to the government for everything. You can't imagine doing anything without the help of government. And this is what this is fundamentally about. This has nothing to do with reforming our healthcare system. The healthcare system in this country is not broken. Let me repeat that. The healthcare system in this country is not broken. There is a panic and a mass hysteria campaign conducted by the mainstream press and liberal Democrats over the last 10 years to try to frighten you into thinking you have to give up your private health care. First of all, the number of 47 million uninsured Americans is a complete lie. You have been lied to day by day, week by week, year by year. Because what's happening is this. They are counting illegal immigrants as the uninsured. Well, the illegal immigrants have no business being in this country in the first place. They've been getting a free ride for now decades off you, the American taxpayer. So it's not 47 million. It's more like 20 million that don't have health care. And of those 20 million that have no insurance, many of them, frankly, are like some of my colleagues at the Washington Times. They are upscale, suburban professionals, many of them young, 27, 28, maybe 32 years of age. They don't want to pay for health care, for the premiums of health care, even though it's provided by the Washington Times, because they rather save the money because they're in perfectly good health. So if they have to see a doctor once a year, once every 2 years, they'd rather pay out of pocket. So we're talking about a very small stratum of the American society that genuinely needs insurance, the working poor. And if we were serious about that, there are free market measures that we could pass that could make healthcare accessible and portable. But that's not what this game is all about. That's not what the Democrats are plotting. They know this perfectly well. What they want is a massive government takeover. That's their, quote, public option. And now there are bills in the House and in the Senate that will now in many ways solidify Barack Obama's dream of creating a socialist welfare state. But to their shock and horror, finally, Americans are now waking up. Americans are now rising up. And there is now a growing government, a backlash against big government. There is now a growing conservative revolt. Americans now sense this is our final stand. This is where we as Americans have to make a decision. Do we want economic freedom or do we want economic servitude? Do we want now to preserve all of the liberties, all of the great values of freedom and self-reliance and personal responsibility that made America the richest, most powerful, most prosperous, and envied country in the world? Or do we want to go down the failed road of stagnation and economic sclerosis and eventually big government statism? In other words, welfare dependency. Do we want to become a nation of welfare bums? Or do we want to stay a country of genuine entrepreneurs and free men and women? This is now the mother of all questions before us. And now in town hall after town hall, American citizens are rising up. Just recently, that turncoat Democratic Senator Arlen Specter held a town hall in Pennsylvania. And to his horror, the citizens weren't happy. They weren't buying it. Boys, let's roll the clip.
When you have a bill, and we have a lot of them, and there are 1,000 pages, which is made by half staff, and we divide up the bill, we have to make judgments very fast. We give it out.
That, my friends, is the growing face of middle America. That, my friends, is the voice of you, ordinary Americans, people like you and me, who are saying enough is enough. And what Barack Hussein Obama has now underestimated is he believes this country was ready for socialism. And so he nationalized the banks. He nationalized the car industry. He nationalized the financial sector. He passed a nearly $1 trillion stimulus package. He then rammed the biggest, most expensive budget in the history of the United States, nearly $2 trillion in debt this year alone. Deficits as far as the eye can see. He has now passed cap and trade, or tax and kill, legislation in the House. And now he was thinking the crown jewel, nationalized health care, was there right in his grasp. And to his horror, the American people are now rising up in town hall after town hall, state after state. And they are now saying, no, we will not go quietly into the good night. No, we will not abandon our forefathers. No, we will not sell away our economic freedom. We will not just give it away for the fake promise of economic and social security. We are free men and women here. And this began in 1776, and it continued at Gettysburg, and it continued on the beaches of Normandy. And every generation, conservatives and Americans have risen up to defend freedom and liberty. And this is now the seminal challenge of our time. And I believe that nationalized health care will break the Obama presidency and it will break democratic rule in Washington. There is now a conservative backlash. Conservatives are now digging in their heels and they are now taking most of the country with them. And here we say, here to Barack Obama and no further. We will not go the way of Europe. We will remain a free, prosperous, and American country. We will not give up our fundamental birthright. And so, my friends, right here, right now, we are taking our stand. And my question to you is this. Do you believe nationalized health care will pass? Do you believe the Democrats are now starting to crumble under the growing popular revolt? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
think we're going to be able to eliminate employer coverage immediately. There's going to be potentially some transition process. I can envision a decade out or 15 years out or 20 years out.
That was Barack Obama on the campaign trail, and there he was finally having a moment of honesty. What they want and what he wants is a single-payer system, meaning a government monopoly over health care. And they can't do it right away, but they'll do it over 5, 10, 15 years. This is the march towards socialism, and they are almost there. And so the question I have for all of you out there and the listeners on the Savage Nation is, have you had enough? And especially to all of you conservative blue dogs, conservative Democrats, is this what you thought you were getting when you elected Barack Obama? Because remember, when he ran against John McCain, he ran as a moderate. He ran as a supposed centrist. Now, many of us conservatives, Michael Savage included, we knew he was a neo-Marxist. We had read his writings. We had seen his record. We had studied his speeches. And we knew he was a fraud and a con man. And the minute he got into power, he would try to implement and ram down our throats a socialist revolution. But frankly, to all of you conservative Democrats, are you disappointed in him? Because I have to tell you, he is now, for the first time, losing support in the Senate and in the House. There is now blood in the water. His poll numbers are dropping. There is now a growing backlash against his nationalized health care plan. The more people read about it, the more they read about rationing, the more they read about bad care, the more they read about inability to have access for certain procedures or access to doctors, the more they see how prevalent euthanasia is in countries with government-run health care, the less people like it. And his support now, for the first time, is starting to ebb. And as I said before, and I will say it again, I believe nationalized health care will break Obama's presidency. This is the weapon that conservatives can use to defeat the Democrats and return to power. I want to hear from you. Is nationalized health care going to pass? Do you think it's a good idea? 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on The Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Are we heading towards socialism? Is Barack Obama going to succeed in pass nationalized health care? I want to hear from you. Let's get to the phones. Bob from Missouri, welcome to The Savage Nation, Bob.
Hi, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm just fine and dandy. I'm I'm a retired Sergeant Major, United States Army. I have been in the government health system ever since I was 19. As an active duty soldier, it's dynamite. Now, I mean, you are put at the top of the list. Anything you cut your finger and you're in there. As a retired Sergeant Major, I was promised when I first went into the Army that I wouldn't pay a dime for my medical if I stayed in the Army until I retired. Well, they lied to me about that. And now I pay about $800 a year. However, it's $800 a year. And as a retired soldier, I go to the back of the list. And Lord help us if we have to go to VA. And could I comment on a couple more things that you talked about?
Well, Bob, just let me just address your first point, because that's government-run health care. They put you to the back of the line. They lie to you. They make false promises. And, you know, Bob, I'll be very honest with you. It makes my blood boil when I hear your story, because here you are. You have given your service to your country. You have risked your life for this country. They promised they would take care of you. And look at you. They throw you to the back of the line. And, you know, to me, it is utterly disgusting. And what they've done to you is that's what they want to do to every single American, except for themselves. I'll guarantee you this. This I guarantee you. Members of Congress are going to have gold-plated health care systems. That I guarantee you. Because, Bob, I'll be very frank with you. The reason why I came to the United States was I left Canada. And I left Canada because of nationalized health care. You want to know why I'm here? I say this in the newsroom all the time. They laugh. I am a refugee from the Socialist Republic of Canada. Now, Canada was an immensely wealthy country before. But they, in the 1970s, did what we are now doing here in the United States. Then it wasn't Barack Obama. It was a politician by the name of Pierre Trudeau. He wasn't an African-American. He was French-Canadian. But when he came onto the power, when he came to power, it was like the French Canada had now awoken. Now there was going to be a leftist revolution within Canada. And piece by piece, abortion on demand, more rights for homosexuals, nationalization of key industries, and then nationalized health care. And before you knew it, within 10 years, Canada's tax rates were one of the highest in the Western world. We had lost our standard of living. Our growth rates was one of the lowest. And we had become an economic basket case. And they promised us, oh, I mean, this was going to be the healthcare system of all healthcare systems. You now wait in line. You have an appointment at 9 o'clock, Bob, in Canada. You're lucky if you see the doctor by 5:30. And let me just tell you this very quick story. My grandmother was killed by Canadian nationalized healthcare. She was a refugee from Eastern Europe. She fled communism. In fact, she spent 3 years in a concentration camp. She actually gave my father and his younger brother, my uncle, over a barbed wire to one of her friends in the village to save them from being murdered. And somehow she survived that camp. And she came to Canada as a refugee. And in Canada, she worked hard. She paid her taxes through the nose, as my father did, as all of his family did. And I don't mean what we pay in the United States. I'm not talking 40% of all your taxes. I'm talking 55, 60, 65%. 65% of what you make went to the government. And when my grandmother was suffered with a stroke, we drove her to the hospital. She was then maybe what, early 70s, maybe mid 70s tops. She clearly had another 5-10 years of life left in her. We brought her to the hospital. My father was all nervous, sweating, worried. My grandmother was literally half incapacitated. We rushed her to the emergency room. And here's what they told us, and I'll never forget it. I'm sorry, Mr. Cooner. We don't have the doctors. We don't have the nurses. We don't have the surgeons to take care of your mother. We have to put her not even in a room. They put her in the hallway on a gurney. For 3 days and three nights, no one even saw her. We couldn't even get a nurse to give her pain medication. And then she died. Now, why did they not take care of her? Because they made a conscious choice to take care of the younger patients, the more, quote, productive patients. They don't give a damn that my grandmother had to suffer through a concentration camp. They don't give a damn that she was cleaning houses for years and paying taxes to the government, that she had to work in a factory to feed her children, or that my father, who finally became made something of himself, was paying taxes through the nose. They didn't care for all of that. Sorry, we don't have room for you. That was their response. This is what's waiting for you here in the United States. You think it's bad now. You wait till the government takes over your health care. Americans have no idea how great their healthcare system is. Just ask yourself this one question. If it's so great in Canada or England or Germany or Sweden, tell me, why is it that when people in the royal family in England get sick, they come to America? Why do all the Saudi wealthy sheiks when they get sick, they don't go to Germany. They don't go to France. They come to America. Why does everybody come to America? Because it is the most freest, technologically advanced, and greatest healthcare system in the world. And you know why that is? Because it's a private competitive system. When you bring in government, you wreck it. And they are going to destroy your healthcare as government has destroyed everything else. Let's go to Marianne in Texas. Marianne, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, I can hardly speak. I am so stricken by the story you just told about the death of your grandmother. I can barely speak other than to say there is no health crisis in this country. And whatever they're trying to do in Washington has nothing to do whatever with our health care system. I know this. I work in a hospital every single week as a volunteer at admissions. I speak just enough Spanish, as most of us do in Texas, to witness papers that have to be signed by people who do not speak English. I was in a room about 6 months ago with an illegal alien. There was no question about it, but I can't name our hospital, but it's part of a large system here in the Austin area. We take everybody. There is no one turned away. This man had open heart surgery at the expense of the taxpayers of Texas and the United States.
Disgraceful. Marianne, it is absolutely disgraceful. And you make so many good points. First of all, everybody in this country has health care. It's a federal law on the books. If you are sick, you go to an emergency room in any hospital. They can't even ask you if you're a legal citizen. They can't ask you if you have health insurance. They're mandated to treat you. So you're not going to die on the streets. Nobody is going to die because somehow they have an ailment or they get into an accident or something happens to them and they don't get treatment. They're going to get treatment. That's number one. Number two, the Democrats run around on the Hill. We have to control costs. We have to control costs. Barack Obama, every day, oy vey, I can't stand it. Every day, he's on television. So healthcare costs are soaring. Healthcare, change, hope. Healthcare costs are soaring. Change, hope. Healthcare costs are soaring. Yeah, you know why they're soaring? Why don't you stop having us treat illegal immigrants? They are bankrupting our welfare system. They're bankrupting our healthcare system. Now, look, it's not that I want to pick on those poor illegal immigrants. God bless them. I feel sorry for them. Look, if I was in Mexico, if I'm in their shoes, yeah, who wouldn't want to come to America? But that's not the point. The point is, it is the job of the American government to protect American citizens, to protect our borders, to protect our welfare system, to protect our health care. Now, these immense costs are being saddled by us. They're being imposed on us. And now we're being told, well, healthcare costs are skyrocketing. We need more government. No, we don't. We just need to ask people a very basic question. Excuse me, sir. Can I have a passport? Can I have proof that you are a citizen of the United States? If you're not a citizen of the United States, you do not deserve social services. In fact, you should be deported. Period. Full stop. End of story. If they just did that, there would be no healthcare crisis. This is a phony crisis. This is a manufactured crisis. And you know what it's about? And they all know it here in Washington. It's about power. They want to control you. And once they control you, they have your vote. And when they have your vote, you keep this liberal regime in power. And that's what this is all about. Nothing more and nothing less. Grant in Houston. Oh, sorry. Grant, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You mean Dave?
Dave. I'm sorry, Dave.
Oh, that's quite all right. Hey, I agree 100%. You hit it on the head about cancer being a death sentence in Canada. My wife is from Chatham, Ontario. And in the last 10 years, we've lost 5 family members on her side to cancer, brain cancer, prostate, breast cancer. I could name the list. Ernie Miller, her uncle, passed 2 years ago. They were kind enough to give him a state funeral. He was the largest sports writer in the state, did the Calgary Stampede book, all of that. But yet they weren't willing to move him up on the line to give him the care that he needed to try and save his life at the time. On the flip side, in 92, my leg was severed in a work accident. The doctor who was able to reattach my leg using a procedure that hadn't been used before was from Edmonton, Canada, coming down here to practice medicine rather than practicing it up there. You know, there's a lot of call for our troops to come home. I support that war. I say bring them home because the real problem's here and the takeover's happening here, and we need them back here now.
Dave, look, I got to tell you, my brother-in-law is Canadian, and he's a doctor, and he's coming to work in the United States because he is sickened and disgusted by what he's seen in the Canadian healthcare system. It is literally breaking apart at the seams, and it's not just in Canada. It's in Britain. It's all across Europe. Socialized medicine doesn't work, but this is the problem, is once you have socialized medicine, it's very hard, almost impossible to go back because it fosters dependency. It reduces the citizen to that of a child. This is the most pernicious effect of big government. It destroys your character. You see, yes, it makes you poorer. Yes, it raises your taxes. Yes, it gives you poorer quality health care. And all those reasons are valid. But even at a deeper level, it destroys your character as a people and as a nation. And what Obama and the Democrats are trying to do, this is a revolution. They are neo-Marxist socialist revolutionaries. And they want to create here what you see in Venezuela, what you see in Cuba, what you see in most of Western Europe. They want to see a socialist state. So they hate the Constitution. They hate American capitalism. Why do you think, just as a quick aside here, why do you think there are emails now being sent out by the White House, led, I'm sure, by that thug, Rahm Emanuel, who learned his politics from Chicago, the fist to the head, and how to steal votes from the ballot box, he and Rod Blagojevich and all those guys from the Chicago gang, where those guys are sending out emails telling American citizens to basically tell on other American citizens who question Obama's health care plan, what they call, quote, fishy emails. These are left-wing thugs, and this is all about power. And everywhere socialism has been tried, it has led to ruin. It has led to the loss of freedom. It has led to disaster. This is why we in America can never allow it to happen here. This is our last stand. I am Jeff Kuhner, filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. I recommend strongly all of you go to michaelsavage.com. There are some very, very important stories. In fact, many of them have just been posted right now. Let me quickly just run down a couple of them. There is an excellent story on the Associated Press about the man in Pittsburgh, that brutal murderer who went into a fitness class, an LA fitness class, and killed three women, at least three women. Many more are wounded, apparently because he hadn't been having sex in about 19 years. Talk about a sick, demented guy. You know, this is in many ways what modern America is slowly coming to. You know, anyway, so he hadn't had a date in something like over 25 years, hadn't had sex in 19 years, hated women. So went in there and brutally gunned down three women. I can tell you right now what the liberal media is going to make of this. They're already spinning it this way, and the echo chamber is going to get louder. We need more gun control. No, we don't. We absolutely don't need more gun control. What we need to do is we need to make sure that American citizens can defend themselves from the real criminals who will get guns no matter what. What we need to do is we need to preempt these sorts of things by looking for warning signals. And clearly this guy was deranged, spoke on his blog, and pretty much advertised he was going to kill people, and nobody did anything about it. Former Congressman William Jefferson, you remember him? The guy with the $90,000 in his freezer, the guy that took a bribe. Well, apparently now he's been convicted on 11 of 16 counts. So he has now been found guilty of taking basically of bribery, of taking bribes. And I got to tell you, my friends, this is always very heartening, because what distinguishes the United States from the rest of the world, and it's something that Americans take for granted. And in fact, I had a Moroccan immigrant tell me this. He said, you know, Jeff, there's a lot of corruption in Morocco. And there's a lot of corruption. I've been to Europe, and there's a lot of corruption in Europe, and there's a lot of corruption in Africa. He goes, but I have to tell you, what's remarkable about the United States is that here, when a politician is caught abusing his power, when a politician is caught taking money, when a politician is caught in a corruption scandal, he or she is held accountable. People are punished for their actions. In most parts of the world, they're not. They are literally exempt from the law, and they can do whatever they like. And so it's gratifying to see that a crook like Congressman Jefferson is going to spend some time in prison and is convicted of bribery, because believe me, he was guilty of sin. There are some other excellent stories. Obviously, what we talked about earlier in the show, very good stories on Clinton's trip to North Korea and the sellout. There's a very nice op-ed piece by John Bolton in how this is enhancing the North Korean regime's legitimacy, another sellout of American interests due to Bill Clinton's trip. And of course, there's Obama's VIP healthcare plan. He's planning to ration your care. He's planning to put you at the back of the line. But believe me, he and his family are not suffering from lack of medical care. He has a staff, according to the Los Angeles Times, check this out. He's got four doctors on staff around the clock taking care of him, plus nurses and physicians' assistants. This is the future, my friend. Two-tiered healthcare. Lousy care for all of us, superb around-the-clock care for the political class in the United States. This is the future of socialism. This is the future of America, unless we do something about it. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage. Michael, I want to thank you once again for giving me the opportunity to fill in. You truly are the greatest talk radio host in the country. May God bless you, and may God bless all of your listeners. Cheers.